Good morning, everyone. You're listening to the World Teacher Program for Share International New Zealand on Planet FM 104.6. Each Friday morning, we bring you information from the teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. The purpose of our program is to introduce Maitreya, the world teacher for the Age of Aquarius. Maitreya does not come alone. He brings with him the Masters of Wisdom, a group of highly evolved teachers who work in many fields and teach us the art of living, how to work in right relationship with each other. With their inspiration, we can transform our civilization, creating justice and peace, and use the technological advances available to us. Approximately every 2,500 years, a new teacher brings a body of teaching to humanity that is suited to our needs at that particular time. Usually this takes place at the end of an age. Right now, as the age of Pisces declines and our solar system aligns with the constellation Aquarius, new energies are beginning to make themselves felt. As these Aquarian energies of sharing and justice stream into our planet, the need for change can be seen more clearly. A period of chaos ensues as the old order lessens its grip on humanity, and the impulse of sharing, justice and peace inspires us to move forward in evolution as a united group.
Good morning and welcome to our program. We would like to start this program with an article titled A Journey Through Life After Death, which is an interview with Leslie Keane, published in Share International magazine. We'll follow that with quotes on the theme of reincarnation. Leslie Keane is an investigative journalist and author. She wrote the New York Times bestseller titled UFOs, Generals, Pilots and Government Officials Go on the Record. That was in 2010. And her most recent book from 2017 is titled Surviving Death, A Journalist Investigates Evidence for an Afterlife. Jason Francis interviewed Leslie Keane about her research into life after death for Share International magazine. And it starts with Leslie Keane saying, there are two cases of reincarnation that I featured extensively in the book. The cases that are most evidential to me as a journalist involve really young children who have specific memories and are able to provide enough details so that investigators can find the person the children say they were and confirm that the information they provided is accurate.
If somebody just has memories that can't be verified, it doesn't mean a whole lot. But it's very compelling when you can locate the person they claim to have been in a previous life and find out that everything they said was accurate to the life of that person. One of the cases involved a two-year-old boy named James Leninger. James began having memories of past life, of course, before he was two. A long series of events occurred over a period of about 2 years when he became obsessed with playing with airplanes and demonstrated knowledge of World War II aircraft. James started to develop nightmares in which he was reliving the crash of an airplane. He was in terror and shrieking in his crib. Eventually, he started to articulate what was happening during his nightmares, and he would scream, "Airplane crash on fire. Little man can't get out."
At certain times, his parents would ask him questions about what was going on. Over time, he was able to communicate that he had been a pilot who was shot down by the Japanese. His parents didn't know how their two-year-old son knew the word Japanese. James talked about how the little man in the plane was him. He said he flew a Corsair, which is a specific type of aircraft, and that it flew off of a boat called the Natoma, later confirmed to be the aircraft carrier USS Natoma Bay. Even more specifically, he said that he had a best friend named Jack Larson, and that his plane had gone down near the island of Iwo Jima.
One day, James' dad was looking at a book about World War II with him and saw a map. James pointed to the map and said that was where his plane went down. His dad was going through a lot of trauma around all of this because he was one Oh, well, he was of the Christian faith and was absolutely convinced this was not possible. It was not part of his religion. He was determined to prove his child wrong, but any time he looked into the memories, he found them to be accurate. James' dad actually wrote some excerpts from my book about his own spiritual progression through this and how he came to realize by the end of that it didn't contradict his faith and he was able to accept it. That's an interesting component to the case that many parents will relate to. Eventually, James' father went to a series of reunions for people associated with the aircraft carrier USS Natoma Bay. He found Jack Larson, his son's friend, in his past life.
After much research and talking to a lot of World War II veterans, he was able to find out who the person was that James had memories of being. His name was James Houston Jr. He died as young James described. When James was about three, he began to draw many pictures of his plane crashing in horrifying situations, on fire and with bombs all around. He would always sign them James 3. When his parents asked why, he would say, "Because I'm the third James." This made sense when he found out the pilot was named James Houston Jr., as the junior implied that the current James was the third one. They also met the older sister of James Houston Jr., who was 84 at the time. She connected very well with little James, and he was able to tell her a lot of details about their childhood that she said he couldn't possibly have known. She became convinced that James was indeed who he said he was.
It's one of the strongest cases we have on record of a small child with specific past life memories. All of these memories were documented by his father before they determined who James was in past life, which is an important element. And another question from Share International is, what happens when someone experiences consciousness outside of their body? And Leslie Keane answers, there are two facets of these experiences. There are verifiable out-of-body experiences and near-death experiences. As a journalist, the out-of-body experiences are better evidence. The important ones involve people leaving their body when they have no brain activity, such as being in cardiac arrest, have no heartbeat, and are essentially clinically dead. When they come back, they are able to report, specific things they've seen or heard in the physical environment when they say they were out of their bodies.
They often describe themselves as being near the ceiling. They can accurately describe what the doctors were saying, the tools they were using, sounds from the machines and things like that. And this was at a time when they weren't supposed to be able to perceive anything at all, with their bodies lying on a table, their eyes closed. Those cases are important because the doctors and nurses can verify the accuracy of what the person said. Therefore, it has to be explained how they could have perceived these things. The suggestion is that their consciousness was indeed operating independently of their body while they were clinically dead.
And the near-death experience involves people who, once they left their body under similar circumstances, journey to another sublime dimensional reality, which they come back and describe. They often say it seemed more real than real life did, a vivid, beautiful, ecstatic experience. They usually don't want to come back, but are often told they have to. Plenty of skeptics believe something is going on in the brain, however. The people who study them don't have any model that can explain all the facets of the experience. They are also life-changing for the experiences. After they have been in this other realm, then they believe to be the afterlife and come back. They are no longer afraid of death. Often they make drastic changes in their lives, become more focused on being of service to others and more spiritually oriented. It often has a profound effect on the people.
The next question to Leslie Keane is, when children have past life memories, do they ever remember the time spent between their past and current life? And she says, I have a chapter called Intermission Memories in my book. There have been studies done on these children who will talk about where they were before they were born into this life. The children with the most memories and the most vivid memories of their previous life tend to be the ones who are more likely to remember the time between lives. But the intermission memories are much harder to verify because they are talking about some other dimension that they lived in. Sometimes what they are describing within that reality has similar characteristics to what people having near-death experiences or NDEs describe.
So you can argue they were both perhaps entering the same interdimensional realm of the other side, whatever you want to call it. Both James Leninger and Ryan Hammonds had memories of times before they were born. They later accurately described to their parents a specific event involving their parents they witnessed from that realm before they were born. Both events did happen close to the time of their conception. Those cases are not as common as the other cases, but very fascinating. Dr. Chim Tucker, a child psychologist at the University of Virginia and probably the world's expert on reincarnation memories in children, has done some studies on intermission memories, which are really interesting.
And how does psychology address the issue of reincarnation and consciousness beyond death? And Leslie Keane says, Dr. Tucker has inherited the work of Dr. Ian Stevenson, who's a psychiatrist at the University of Virginia, and who was a pioneer in investigating the cases of children with past life memories. Stevenson spent many decades travelling all over the world and publishing thousands of pages of research in books and papers. Jim Tucker worked with him towards the end of Stevenson's life. And when Stevenson died about 10 years ago, Dr. Tucker took over his work. I don't think there are a lot of psychiatrists, certainly in America, who deal with this topic. There are some psychologists who have taken an interest and written about it, but they are in the minority. You wonder how many times children go to a psychiatrist with strange memories, but they are not recognised as being memories of past lives because our culture does not accept it.
Another question. In your opinion, how would a scientific acceptance of life after death include reincarnation affect how we perceive our lives and relationships with one another? And she answers, there are cultures where it is universally accepted, India, for instance, and Buddhist countries. But those countries, the belief system is basically religious, not scientific. The problem is that I don't think something like this can be proven to be true, at least with the tools we have now. Though even if more scientists just took it seriously, worked with the information, experimented with it, and stopped dismissing it as being impossible, we would all benefit. Even if it just reminded us how little we know about the physical world, how much mystery exists, and how much we still need to discover. It would open our eyes to the questions that promote wonder for us and encourage us to probe more deeply into the nature of who we are.
We would realize we have a bigger responsibility in life than if we were simply physical, robotic, brain-dominated creatures and all life ended when we die. It would certainly give a lot more meaning to people's lives and make them feel more connected to each other and realms of experience that are not just the physical day-to-day experiences. That can only have a positive effect. It certainly has on me. I was a skeptic when I began my exploration of all of this. It's had a wonderful effect on me in terms of opening me up to a greater sense of purpose and connection to the world, people around me, and the mystery of things.
If it were ever proven that we survived death, I think people would have a broader sense of purpose and not harming others, because if you are going to move on to another reality after you die, you will have to come in terms with the life you led. So perhaps it would create a more peaceful world and prevent cultures and religions from fighting with each other and over their belief systems that are on the surface different. It might make for a more peaceful world. So you can get more information on survivingdeathkeen.com.
Yes, I might just spell that out. Surviving death is obvious. The word keen is spelled K-E-A-N.
Yes, that's right. Thank you, Megan.
And we've got time for a few quotes, again, on the theme of reincarnation. And this is, again, taken from Share International magazine from early last, or actually from a couple of years ago. And we'll start off with the first quote. Maitreya will illuminate the workings of the laws which govern all life and elucidate for men the purpose of their presence here on earth. He will show how action begets reaction, and thus how men create themselves the circumstances of their lives. In this way will men come to understand the need for harmlessness in every situation and relationship. His teaching will remove for men the fear of death. His very presence will be the guarantee of immortality. His words will conquer too the fear which stalks through most men's lives, crippling their spontaneity and joy. His experience will guide men through the labyrinth of the evolutionary journey, ensuring safe and sure passage for those who can follow his footsteps. As friend and guide, teacher and mentor, this eldest brother of humanity will fulfill his task. And that's taken from an article titled The Teaching of Maitreya by Benjamin Krem's master.
Okay, another one here. It is the soul which decides if we are male or female. According to its purpose in any particular life, the soul creates its vehicle of expression on the physical plane in all respects. We really are an expression of our soul. On the soul plane, there is neither male nor female, and the division of the sexes on this level is but a reflection of the polarities of the Father, Mother, God, whose union brings us as souls into being. Through repeated experience as both male and female, we eventually bring both these aspects into equilibrium. And that was from Mr. Krem's book, Maitreya's Mission, Volume 1.
And again from Benjamin Krem, there's a quote from the Ageless Wisdom Teachings book. We might be in the same race for a large number of incarnations, or we might have a succession of different experiences over half a dozen races, or we might be restricted only to one race. We might never incarnate in the East if we are in the West, and never in the West if we are in the East. Or we might flip between one and another for many incarnations. It is to do with individual destiny.
And when you see me, you will recognize a friend from long past, one who has taught you often before. Many will come to know this, will recognize me, and allow me to enter their lives. Take with you this pledge. I shall restore to you the law of God. I shall bring to you God's love. I shall release into the world the waters of life. In this precious stream, shall you grow into the birthright, or into your birthright. And that was message number 138.
From Maitreya. The next quote is from Benjamin Krem, and this is from the book Maitreya's Mission, Volume 1. Every soul incarnates and reincarnates under the law of rebirth. Groups of souls come in together to work in order to work out karma recreated in the past. Hence, this law provides the opportunity to repay ancient debts, to recognize and work with old friends, to accept ancient responsibilities and obligations, and to bring to the surface for reuse talents and qualities acquired long ago. What beauty and order there is, therefore, in this law which governs our appearance on this plane.
Right. Now, sadly, that's the end of our program. We've run out of time, but if you want to visit our website, go to share-international.org, or if you want to email us at sharenset@yahoo.com. So have a nice day, and God bless.